The wheel of time turns, and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. In one podcast, called The Lorehounds by Some, a weekly recap with tons of analysis, two Wheel of Time superfans will lead you through a world of powerful magic, tricky prophecies, and cutthroat politics. Join me, John, and my co-host Alicia for weekly coverage of Season 3 by searching your podcast app for The Lorehounds. Dovyandi sitovas again. It's time to roll the dice. Welcome back to the House of the Hounds. This is our first ever feedback episode. I'm John.
And I'm David, and this is feedback for episode 3, The Burning Mill, of HBO's original series, House of the Dragon.
This is very exciting, David. And people can, of course, write in HOTD@thelorehounds.com. They could also go to thelorehounds.com, head to the contact page, where they can leave a voicemail or a contact form entry, and they can send a Discord message to us, you know, or tag us in the Discord, tag Nancy M, Two Kids Who Dogs, in the Discord, and she will get you taken care of. She is our Dragon Master or Hand of the Pod or something.
Hand of the Pod is trending.
Yeah. We still gotta figure out your official title, Nancy. Write in. You know, you write this whole document for us. You could write in yourself.
She did write in earlier today. Oh. But I'll read that a little bit later.
Okay.
We get through this intro fluff stuff.
Very nice. And of course, if you want early ad-free access to all this stuff, you can go to patreon.com/thelorehounds. You can go to Supercast. All of that stuff is in the link tree in the show notes. And
I'm going to plug the season pass really quick.
Oh, yeah.
$10. You get all of our season 1 recap coverage. You get all of our season 2 early and ad-free access. And you're done. Like, you don't, there's no monthly subscription, nothing. If you're just here for House of the Dragon, you feel like you want to throw some bucks, support the community, boom, season pass is for you. You get the show guide as well. And the show guide is pretty awesome.
It sure is. Now, David, we've got a slew of feedback, a whole
14
Dragon's Dookie of feedback.
Dragon's Dookie. Yeah, that's one thing they never cover on the show.
You think that when they fly by, they give a flyby? Is it white like bird poop?
Ooh, it depends on what they've been eating, I would suppose. Kind of like whales. Like if they've been eating krill, it's red and stuff. Yeah. Do you want to do an aerial? I mean, she could have just pooped on Crispy Cole and Gawain while they were flying over she could have just come up over the forest edge and just sort of, you know, like the firefighter aircraft do, right?
And missed opportunity.
That red slurry. Big time.
Missed opportunity.
This podcast has taken a turn.
Yeah, I'd pay money to see Kristen Cole be pooped on.
Yeah.
Well, that didn't come out right. Okay.
Oh, boy.
All right. Oh, boy. All right. I feel like we're already in the late night stage of this.
Way in the gutter here.
All right. So
it's been a long day.
Let's get on with this. You're going to lead us through the feedback, right?
I am. And I thought I started us off with a little message Nancy M posted in a chat that we have to coordinate feedback and stuff like that. And we were singing her praises, and she says, "Oh, shucks, guys, I'm just so thrilled to be helping!" ! I'm boasting to all my friends and family about being Hand of the Pod. Unfortunately, they look back at me blankly as they don't get this online community that we've all created. I don't know what I would do without this. I would have no one to talk about Star Wars, House of the Dragon, Game of Thrones, Tolkien. I spent the majority of my career in government communication offices, and one of the things that I was very good at was taking the words of politicians and bureaucrats and making them sing. And when it came to brochures and other materials, the design and organization of content is just as important as what the words say. So when I saw your feedback document, I rubbed my hands in glee. God help me, I'm procrastinating. I really don't want to go out and mow the lawn. So, Nancy, we are so pleased and privileged to have your help and support. And the document that you put out together, like we've been refining our process and workflow and figuring out how to use the different outlining text and everything. And I think we got it really dialed in. Nancy's been taking your emails and your Discord messages and then chopping them up. And normally what John and I would do is we just read through an email as it was presented to us. But Nancy has taken this and broken things up thematically. So we have all these theme headings, and she then breaks up the material and puts it all into the different places. So if you wrote in an email, you might hear your email broken up into multiple spots. But, and we've heard back from multiple people saying, this is a cool format. This is really good. It keeps us moving. It keeps some interest and liveliness in the feedback episode. So like, I think we've kind of hit on a new thing. Like, this is great, right? A new innovation.
Oh, yeah.
In podcast technologies.
This is, well, I don't know if I'd call Nancy a technology, but certainly podcast skills.
Techniques, maybe? Culture? What would this be? I don't know.
Doesn't matter. We're going to go forward and we're going to do this feedback. So start us off, David.
I don't want to add another of my own comments, says Nancy, but I found this item online for you guys to drop in that apparently in the tapestry, there is the baby Jaehaerys lying in state with a vine that creeps along and slices across the neck and the executed rat catchers of King's Landing hanging from the walls of the city. Have you been paying attention to the tapestries, John?
I'm skipping.
skipping
them.
Like, I'm straight up anxious. Cold skipping them. Oh my gosh.
I'm too anxious to get to the show. I heard this week that they're adding to it, and now I have to go back and I have to start watching them again.
Yeah, for real. It's I haven't been watching it enough closely enough to actually be able to go, okay, this was the new bit, this was the new bit. But I can sense that it's changing, and obviously a message like this. So I think it's really cool that they're taking in Helena and the tapestries from the walls from season mm-hmm. one and are telling us the past story that we have been watching. I think it's really cool.
It's very nice. Very nice.
It's a lot of coordinating work post-production to get that done.
Yeah.
All right. So first topical heading, Seasons Pass and the Hot D Show Guide. Partial email from Danielle. Got an idea for the new, quote-unquote, mildly interesting. You ready here for this, John?
I'm ready.
Some jazz with hot lore. Picture this. David asks a pointed question, and John replies, that's some hot lore.
Some hot lore.
What do you think
I'm
about that?
I'm going to have to mull this one over.
Okay.
Like, I'm going to mull it over. Okay. I still like WAFO.
Okay.
But I'm not saying I'm not going to take hot lore. Maybe I'll alternate them, you know?
Yeah, WAFO is not sticking in my head.
It's not great.
No, I was walking around doing some chores and stuff today, and I was like, "Wait, what was that thing? Blafo? Gafo?" I couldn't. I don't. It didn't work.
All right, thanks, so, Danielle. That's a fun suggestion.
I like that suggestion. It could work. I mean, as a stand-in, I mean, you know, we could still play it around. But I like that. That's some hot lore. All right, Shane on the Discord. The show guide rules. We should have a little. Horn of the Devil emoji in there. As a self-proclaimed maester of the Song of Ice and Fire universe myself, I couldn't have done any better. That's saying something. Shane is appreciative of the show guide.
I'm appreciative of Shane.
I'm loving the episode guides and the visual stuff, and you figured out how to, like, when I was doing Shogun and True Detective, I was taking pictures with my iPhone, and I had to, like, make sure the room was dark so I wouldn't get room reflections and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But you've been able to finagle some technology and to be able to put it to another thing, to get to another thing, and actually get a really nice clean shot of screenshots. So it's great.
I just tricked my computer into not telling HBO that I'm taking screenshots.
I love it. I love it. Kathy W. by email. Hey, Lorehounds crew. Great to be back for another season of Hot D. I just wanted to get in touch to say that I'd be in favor of a separate feedback pod. There you go. For purely selfish reasons, I live in Ireland and the show airs in the middle of the night here. I could watch it before I go to work, but then I feel like I'm not savoring it properly.
Mm.
So I wait until Monday evening to watch it, usually at a friend's with wine, you know, to savor it. Wait, is this Kathy, who is our physician who wrote in from...
Oh, I don't know, but Kathy is a lore master.
Yeah. So I start listening to pods on my drive to work on Tuesdays, and then It's usually too late to send feedback for that week. So more often than not, I don't. I only routinely had feedback for The Last of Us. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think you're right. Thank you, Kathy, for coming back.
You guys had specific questions for me, so a little bit of breathing room would be lovely for us non-US folk. It would also be more podcasts, which is not a bad thing for us. Well, there you go.
The Europeans are really busy on Sunday nights sorting through their multicolored money. I've been poking fun at them on the Discord.
We've been having a funny chat on the Discord. It's like veered way off into all kinds of
look,
funny
when
stuff.
When you can't, you know, again, I think Cyrus made a good point. You know, you make it multicolored, sure. I understand ease of sorting. Why does it have to be different sizes? Come on, guys.
They're wildly different sizes, too. They're incrementally different sizes.
It looks like a toddler shoved a bunch of bills together.
Do you know Australian money is plastic?
I don't like that.
It lasts a really long time. And it has translucent things in it. It's really weird.
Arnar. I don't like that.
Kathy continues, also I had a funny conversation. This show is actually ridiculous with my cousins a couple of days ago about Hot D, which kind of played into the maybe just name people different names thing. I'm listening to a bunch of show podcasts, usually when I'm driving, and I find myself gently correcting people when they get the names wrong for characters, as if they might hear me. I was trying to explain this tiny peeve to her, and she doesn't watch any Game of Thrones content or isn't a fantasy person at all. And she asked me, what did I mean? So I told her, well, I guess there's a lot of similar names. There's Rhaena and Rhaenyra and Rhaenys and Daemon and Aemon and two Aegons and the two Viserys, and obviously Eric and Eric, not to mention Jacaerys and Jahera. And never mind, I see the issue now. She just laughed at me. Anyway, looking forward to next week.
Yeah, remember when you asked me if I had a typo in the show guide, but it was just
right.
That
that's right.
I wrote Jaharis. I don't remember. I wrote one of them and you thought I meant the other, and I was like, oh no, yeah, Jahera is still alive.
Which would have been very unusual for you because you're a much better typist. You're a bit more precise than I am.
I try to. Yeah. I mean, I make a lot of mistakes. I just backspace a lot.
Well, you hide them well. You hide them well. I think I was trying to explain to my spouse a couple, not this episode, was it the one before? I think it was. And I was trying to explain the whole thing and, you know, oh, and she slept with him and then this and then what? And I was just, and I think I mentioned this in the pod too, that like, I felt like I was trying to explain Days of Our Lives or something like that. It really is. It's like, it's soap opera for nerds. This is soap opera for nerds with dragons. Yeah.
I've been having a fun time doing the stupid memes with all like the names. I was like, you know, Daemon when his niece wife's sister says he's pathetic, and so all the family trees are messed up.
It is. Kathy, good to hear from you. And we are happy to accommodate you with a little bit more spacing. I don't know. We don't have a specific day. This day, we're definitely recording on Wednesday because tomorrow is a national holiday. For us Americans, you might have heard of something about, you know, fireworks and people losing digits and things like that. You know,
it's National Hand Surgeon Day.
That is like so perfect, isn't it? I was going to make another joke, but I'm going to stop myself and not get added at. Anyway, so whether we record Wednesdays or Thursdays going forward, we'll kind of see. But yes, you'll definitely have some more space. So we'll have the hot takes out for subscribers right after the episode airs, main podcast on Monday nights, and then feedback like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, before the weekend for sure. All right. Yes. Next topic. Feedback specific to the structure of the pod, about the pod, answers to questions you asked of listeners. Athena on the Discord, no cap, this was an amazing podcast. All our hosts have Riz. Okay, I'm out of cool kid slang now.
No phantom tax for you, Athena.
I was wondering if you took a group of, this is Gen Z, right? That we're talking about.
There was some debate about that on the Discord, whether it's Gen Z or if it's the Gen Alpha stuff leaking into my vocabulary now.
So if you took a group of Gen Z alpha, you know, younger millennials.
No. Don't lump us in with this. We're not involved. We're not involved. I make fun of it, but the words are just ridiculous.
And if you just played some 60s, you know, jazzy bebop stuff where the people are doing the scat. And
you got the riz on the skibbity toilet, you hear, old sport?
See, and I think they would just get it, right?
Oh, I think I got it. Hey there, old sport. We got the skibbity toilet and the Rizzler and the yacht on the Rizzler.
That's it. That's what I'm saying. Have you ever seen the original Airplane movie?
Yes.
The comedy? And
When I used to do sound for like venues, I once screened it outside in like a drive-in kind of thing.
Perfect.
And it was awesome. It was a really funny movie.
Such a funny movie.
That was the first time I saw it too. And I got paid to watch it.
Even better. And then there's the whole thing. I speak jive.
And don't call me Shirley.
So good. Abigail, email. This is Abby, I believe. Greetings, House of the Hounds and Septa Nancy? ? Is that another term for Nancy?
Don't lump her in with the Septas.
With the Septas? Yeah. Thanks for giving me for a bit more time to send in some thoughts. I'll try to answer your questions to the best of my knowledge. Quite the pressure there, David. I was glad to be of service with the strong sigil. I was prompt with an answer only because I was also curious about it and digged a bit more, not because I'm any kind of expert in house sigils. Harrenhal's design was so good, it really leans on the sinister vibes. So that was, I posted something in the Discord trying to figure out that because there was a couple of tattered sigils hanging in the in the great hall there when Daemon was skulking about with his sword. I was listening to another podcast. I think it was The Watch, one of the Ringer ones. And they were saying the thing that we didn't see was, yeah, okay, Daemon's got a dragon, but they didn't show us him trying to spend like 20 minutes climbing down from the top of that tower up there in the rain, in his armor, you know, down wet stones. So, you know, yeah, dragons are cool and stuff, but anyway, that's what that was. And that, yes, it is a very cool looking sigil. You asked me about the pronunciation of, here we go. Is it Jacaris?
We don't know.
And, oh dear, that's a tough one. I do remember coming across a Valerian lesson that mentions him. It was also a sentence that went, I'm going to say just Jacaris. Jacaris roared with Vermax, translated as Jacari? Jacari Vermasco Grutas? I'm guessing here. So we might think it might be Jacaris, but his mother calls him Jace, not Jake. So it's fair to go with Jacaris, as we heard in episode 3, whichever works for you. Ha ha. So Jacaris? Is that where
I'm just going to call him Jason. I'm going to call it a day. Folks, done. We broke Game of Thrones.
We broke ourselves trying to fix Game of Thrones. Thanks again for encouraging my ramblings. I'll continue to try and answer any questions if and when they arise. Here to serve, Valar Dohaeris, Abby. Thanks, Abby. Always good to have a Valerian translator in the house.
And thank you, Abby, for writing in after I said, here's more time, Abby.
All right. Email from Chris M. on a similar question. And Chris, yes, your email did arrive in the right place. Chris got confused with a couple of other podcasts because everybody's got HOTD as the, you know, before the at sign in a lot of things. So, Chris, we got your email. And on the Jacaris, Luceris pronunciations, as someone else who's been bothered by this forever, first off, Gurm says pronounce stuff however you want. Obviously, that's not satisfying, though. Mm-hmm. Unlike other fandoms where you get in a lot of trouble.
Robert Jordan has like glossaries in the back of his books where he'll tell you how to pronounce things.
Oh, really?
He is very, very intentional very specific about how he thinks things should be pronounced.
I remember when I was a kid and I'd be reading, you know, fantasy stuff and I would just bracket that. I'd just go, okay, it kind of sounds like this in my head and I'm just not even going to bother. And I would just move right past it because I just couldn't spend the time trying to break that down.
Mm-hmm.
Chris continues, my understanding is these are hereditary Valerian names. So looking at the pronunciation of David Peterson's in-universe Conlang, it should be a hard C, bracket K. For both. Also, technically, according to Conlag, the AE sound should be pronounced like AI, the vowel in psi, and R as in flap, like in Spanish. Okay, this is breaking my brain now. You'll notice that in Hot D and GOT in Game of Thrones, that when speaking High Valyrian, characters pronounce Daemon and Daenerys, Daemon and Daenerys, respectively. That would give us Jacaerys, Lucaerys in turn, since Gurm reportedly consulted Peterson for book translation for future book translations. I guess we can call the Conlang canon. That said, being a second-gen immigrant in the U.S., I'm pretty used to people adapting ethnic, quote-unquote, ethnic names, words to suit English pronunciations if they don't know how to say it. My headcanon is that since Valyrians themselves are relatively recent immigrants, the fact that Westerosi characters can't settle on proper pronunciation for the foreign-sounding names in the common tongue is the same thing. I usually just say Jacaerys and either Lucaerys or Lucaerys myself. So I'm sounding out the phonetics that the way that Chris wrote in their email. Thoughts, John, on pronunciations?
I'm less sure about the pronunciation after reading these two emails than I was beforehand. And I think that's an accomplishment.
I think.
You know, can I just say, I pride myself on being pretty good at pronouncing things like Tolkien and the Wheel of Time. Like, I can say near Neath Arnoidiad when I'm talking about the unnumbered tears.
Right, and you can say it not unironically. You can say it very seriously.
Right. And I even did a whole segment on conlanging in my last Shireside chat.
Wow, okay.
And yet, I can't fucking do this. I just can't do it. I just can't do it, George. You've defeated me. Well, Dune. I'm never gonna get Dune.
I was just gonna bring up Dune. I was gonna make fun of the whole Dune thing. You can do Robert Jordan till the sheep come home, but you can't do Kwisatz Haderach, which is a Jewish rooted word. That's a word rooted from our modern Judaism. So, well, ancient Judaism, but you know what I mean.
So. Well, you know, I have Dune downloaded on my Kindle. And a few times I've been like, should I open it? And then I go back and I just don't want to go. I just don't want to do it. I just don't want to do it right now. Because then I go to Terry Pratchett and he comforts me, you know, he's nice and easy.
But, you know, you gotta love a fantasy series that goes from the Kwisatz Haderach to Paul. Hey, Paul.
Well, it's the same thing in Tolkien, right? Like,
yeah,
Tom Bombadil
Do you think Tom Bombadil could speak to Gen Z and Skibbity Bebop language? Because
I think Tom Bombadil speaks whatever he wants. I don't think he's bound by the rules of generations.
But he's got that sing-songy sort of dialogue, doesn't he? Isn't that accurate? Yeah. So,
hey, doll Mary Doc, ring a ding dillo.
See, that's it's what
Tom
I'm saying.
Tom Bombadillo.
That's what I'm saying. All right, Nate on the Discord. Uh-oh.
Wait, he's
calling you out.
Hey, doll Mary Doc, ring-a-dong-dillo. It's Tom Bombadillo. All right, now you can go.
That sounds really good. Sounds really good. I just so listeners know, I tried to get John to play some light jazz underneath the whole feedback show, but he was not having it. So
I didn't want to torture everyone. And these sound bites are only like 2 minutes long.
That's true. Nate's calling you out. He says, I've got some things to say about John's comment re-Shogun. But of course, he doesn't, you know, that's the call.
He didn't say it.
He didn't say it.
Where you at, Nate? Where you at?
He's coming for us.
Say him to my face.
We don't need any. I was trying to think of some Shogun-related humor, but I couldn't. It failed. So, the world of Hot D, general impressions. Chris M., another part of Chris M.'s email. In general, my impression is that the show is doing a better job of building character motives that fit the events of the books. Where the characters are sometimes flat, thin sketches, which given FNB is...
Fire and Blood, yeah.
Fire and Blood is an in-universe historical chronicle from biased second, third-hand POVs, not our main characters' heads. That makes sense. The Rhaenyra, Daemon, Rhaenyra, Missaria, Daemon, Rhaenys, everyone, and Rhaenyra, Rhaena interactions in this episode. gosh, in this episode in particular, make related events really ring true. Really just a shout out to the writer's room and the cast for creating messy, nuanced characters out of limited source material. John?
Absolutely. Thoughts? They are seeding so much stuff right now. And as we talked about last season and early this season, like, there are things that you can look back on that were seeded several episodes before and it felt natural.
Mm-hmm.
Great job all around.
And I think Abby has something to say about that later too, in terms of the whole book interaction and whatnot. And so every time I see in the community reactions to things that people are like, oh, wow, that's how they did that. Or I didn't think we'd get it this way. Or it's interesting that they did it that way. Like, I enjoy people exploring, like, oh, I had it in my head this way, but then they did it that way. That's really cool. And then there's other people like, you know, hands on fist and waggy fingers and like, well, that's not blah, blah, blah. But this is not, from my understanding, what the books are. The books are very thin sketches in most cases, right? In Fire and Blood.
They are. There's some intention stuff, but it's mostly, again, it's not a firsthand account. This is all supposed to be right. The Maesters writing 200 years later.
Was the cheese, the blood and cheese thing more? Because people talk about it like it had a lot of detail to it.
The blood and cheese thing, the reason that... So the idea is maybe the Greens got their narrative put into history, right? Because one of the Maesters... forgot the name of the Maester, but one of the Maesters that wrote the histories that they're being relied upon, the first-hand mm-hmm. accounts that are being relied upon, was, I believe, on Team Green.
Okay.
And so some of the things are biased a little bit towards them. And so I think that people are saying it was probably exaggerated, the depravity of which Blood and Cheese did what they did, even though it was already pretty depraved. Mm-hmm. The thing that I wish they had done, which I understand why they couldn't, is in the books they had two sons, which they didn't have a second son in the book.
Right. And I think you talked about that in the episode, right? That there was historical timeline stuff that they decided to do.
They compressed the timeline. They couldn't fit another son in. It's fine.
Right.
But I do wish they had figured out some way to give Helena a choice, because that was the most traumatic thing, I think, for her was they had two kids in front of her. They said, pick one that you want to die. You know, we're going to take a son. Pick one son to die. And she picks one, which is not the heir. And they go, okay, now we're going to kill the other one. And they put him right in front of her. And they say, your mom wanted you dead.
Mm.
Isn't that so much more traumatic psychologically?
Do we need that on screen? Did we need that?
Are we shying away from trauma in Game of Thrones? Are we kidding?
But we complained a lot about physically.
It's not more physically traumatic. It's not more gory. It's not more horrific in terms of physicality. It is psychological horror, which I think is something that the Red Wedding had. I think so. They are the Red Wedding. I mean, all these betrayals, Lord Bolton, the Reigns of Castamere playing, where all of a sudden it's a sudden betrayal. I really think, and there were other horrific points, right? Catelyn Stark takes Walder's wife at knife point and goes, if you kill my son, I'll kill her. And he's like, I can get another wife. It's fine.
Right.
All these things that are layered. And I do think that the way they did Blood and Cheese did not capture all the emotional layers that were in the book.
Mm-hmm. It was a pretty short scene, relatively mm-hmm. speaking.
It still could have been. But again, this is something that I'm not going to keep complaining about as we go forward. But I try to be on the level with my critiques, and I think this show's operating at a very high level, and so I'm going to judge it on a high level. That scene could have been better.
Mm-hmm.
It just could have been. It could have been mm-hmm. more dramatic, and I think that this was one of the few times that they changed something from the books, and it was for the worse.
Interesting. Worse. Like, that's saying it was a negative as opposed to...
It was a negative change for me.
Okay, that's interesting.
Whereas I think that most of the changes they take from the book are positive.
Right. It's interesting. Okay. Just don't go kicking any dogs. The World of Hot D, Echoes of History. Brian8063 on the Discord says, this is like seeing the European leaders stumble towards World War I. That, I think, is an interesting comment in the sense that the certainly moving the children away sort of spoke to me of World War II and the, you know, the air campaign against England. But this idea that there's a whole bunch of people out there who have a lot of power and a lot of imperfect information, and they keep misreading things or getting little things wrong, or things are maybe a little bit more nuanced or opaque, and then they make decisions on this imperfect information, and then that those all of that, the culmination of all of those ends up leading to war, like in an inevitable sense that we cannot get away from it. Like, we, how can we not veer away? How can we not veer away from war? And it's interesting because I'm thinking now about some of the opportunities and world opportunities, whatever circumstances in the modern era, in a more modern era, in the Cold War, where it could have very easily led to nuclear confrontation. And then they installed the
And you're even giving us the George Bush nuclear.
Nuclear. that they even installed a, you know, a hotline phone between the Kremlin and in Washington, D.C. so that, you know, the two leaders on the either side of the Cold War could have a one-to-one communication to de-escalate. And that's absolutely what we don't have here is, you know, Rhaenyra had to sneak in as a SEPTA to be able to have this face-to-face with Alicent. And then they're both like, we don't have the power. Well, Alicent is. She's like, it's too late. It's going to happen.
Right. I think she, the tragedy of Alicent here, and I think that they wrote this scene really well. I've seen criticisms of how they did this, of how they had Rhaenyra talk to her about the Song of Ice and Fire.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they really sold me on Alicent will mold. I did a TikTok on this, actually. I did a TikTok on, and where I actually just spoke to the camera and I talked about how the Greens are trying so hard to mold Aegon into what they want him to be. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to make Viserys' words fit him. They're trying to make the Conqueror's armor fit him, but it's ill-fitting.
Oh, yeah,
good
point.
They're putting the crown on. They're so focused on objects and items and words.
Well, they're looking for the semiotic. They're looking for the symbolism and the ritual and the trappings of it. Yeah,
but he's just not it.
Right.
He's just not it. Mm-hmm. And so Alicent realizes, looking back, I think her whole image of this is shattered. She knew that he was going to be a bad king, but her whole mindset was, if I can just hold on to Viserys naming him heir, then I'll know I did the right thing. Mm. Now that's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's absolutely gone with that. And she has nothing to hold back on. But they've already gotten rid of her dad. They've already pushed her to the side. She has no influence anymore. It's over.
And she said as much to Otto at one point, you know, if you quit undermining me, between the both of us, we can control this kid. We can manage him. And then Aegon says to him, I forget what the line exactly was, but it was, I have dared, I have tasted that sweet wine, and it excites me. I like it. I like pushing boundaries. I like being wild and not having forbearance, unlike my father, who I have no respect for. So they thought they could control him. And they never had control on it. Well, but he did. He did ask his mom a couple of times, like, hey, you know, what do you think? Or how should I handle? And then, of course, in his greatest need, after his son is murdered, she can't handle sitting down with him.
Mm-hmm. Even, and that's not a one-time event, right? I mean, you look at the carriage ride to his
inauguration. She slapped him, right?
To his...
Or she slapped him at one point.
I don't think it was in there. No, it wasn't there. It was after he assaulted Diana, who, by the way, somebody did bring up, she was in the last episode. I didn't say it in the pod.
It's in the emails. We've got emails about it. Yeah.
It's in the show guide, actually. I wrote it in the show guide. I just didn't.
Nice.
Didn't say it on the pod. But the carriage ride to his crowning was, he goes, do you love me? And she goes, you imbecile. That's what she responds with.
It's so hurtful.
She doesn't ever inspire trust, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just unfortunate. It's just unfortunate.
And of the two people, like, if you're fortunate enough to have two parents, and I know we all have different circumstances and situations, but one of the things that you want from your parents is at least some kind of unconditional love or support. Yeah, you committed, you know, atrocities, you're going to jail or what have you, but I still love you, right? You're still my child. I still hold you in my heart in some way. And that's really important to the formation of our identities and for us to be able to feel like we can go out in the world and not, hopefully not commit genocide or unspeakable war crimes, but that it's, that's an important part. And she's just never been able to give that to him all the way back to season one, where she's holding him and he's crying and being colicky. And she's like, ugh, get this thing away from me. Like, she hands it off to a nursemaid, like, ugh.
Right. And Viserys is barely aware that he has kids other than Rhaenyra.
Yes, it's true.
You ever see that meme where it's like the one kid's like drowning at the bottom, like drowning in the water, and another, and there's a skeleton at the bottom of the pool, and then the one mother is like holding her baby in front of her, like, yay, you. Somebody made a meme with that where it's like the mom admiring Rhaenyra. Okay. Well, Aegon is drowning and Aemond is at the bottom of the sea.
Good times. Good times. Marilyn, our favorite Tolkien scholar, sent in an email. She says, hello, David and John. Hello, Marilyn. Maestra Marilyn here. Okay, that's an interesting title. I like this. To give you just a bit of tidbit about something that occurred to me relating to English history, she was called Margaret of Anjou. And she was definitely not thought well of by most people outside of her own faction. She was young and beautiful when she married an old king who had occasional bouts of insanity and catatonic states. There was a suggestion that the son she bore him was the result of an affair with a noble who supported her most strongly. She was bound and determined that her son would become king, even though there was a strong faction in opposition who had at least as good a claim to the throne as did the Lancastrian line she represented. Yes, we're talking War of the Roses here. I want to make a quick interjection here, too. Marilyn is not watching the show. But she is listening to the podcast and she is reading the show guides. Mm. So she's like fully aware of the...
She gets the pamphlets.
She does. She gets the Dick Turpin pamphlets. she's fully aware of the story and plot line and the show as it's being reinterpreted by us. And yet she's dropping lore bombs all over the place. So I love it. I think it's great. Continuing, she was praised for her beauty and her courage and vilified for her ruthless persecution of the war, inviting the Scots to cross the border and ravage the northern England, among other poor choices. Her son, Prince Edward, was killed in the Battle of Tewkesbury, and she was imprisoned for 10 years or so, after which she was shipped back home to France, where her noble father did his best to ignore her. Any of that sound familiar?
Hmm.
John, Marilyn, what do you know of War of the Roses? Roses?
I don't know if you and Marilyn are aware, but the first three Game of Thrones books are based on the Wars of the Roses.
Oh, really? I had no idea. Yeah,
this is George's inspiration for the whole War of the Five Kings.
There you go.
I mean, that's not this story, but it's in this universe for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole Robb Stark thing is the politics between the Lannisters and the Starks and everybody else. That is based on the Wars of the Roses.
There you go. So I think Marilyn has, it's enough of in the DNA that she's
been able to
pick it up. You did. Do we have any kind of, she wins internet points, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Right? A bowl of cereal.
A bowl of cereal. You're heavy-handed with the cereal today, David, I gotta say. You just throw them out.
I'm not heavy-handed with cereal.
Are you working for General Mills or something?
I made one comment on the Discord in Acolyte, and then you're accusing me of being
suspicious of you now. I think you might be working for General Mills now.
You're sus.
Skibbity.
Nate, our favorite Japanese scholar on the Discord, the conflict in House of the Dragon is a metaphor for the Onin War of 1467 to 1477, with the succession disputes between two heirs in the Ashikaga line of shoguns and their various subordinate military governor families.
Hmm.
I know nothing of this particular war.
But me either.
It's interesting. I love the fact that we have War of the Roses and a shogunate era war as primary sources. The Onin War was also known as the upheaval of the Onin, and was a civil war that lasted from 1467 to 77, right? Yeah, Onin refers to the Japanese era during which the war started. Okay, da 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 da. So that's just the Wikipedia. There's, it's a very long article. We need a summation of this, Nate.
Nate, I know you're on it already. By the time you finish listening to this sentence, you'll have been writing an email.
There's some stuff here on young regents, stress succession, and things like that. So, okay, yeah, give us a quick breakdown, Nate, and I would love to compare that.
Thanks, Nate.
All right, moving on. Gurm stealing from Shakespeare? ? Denise Probably. The Dreamer.
Look, everybody steals from Shakespeare. Let's all calm down now.
Source. Denise the Dreamer. It seems episode 3 had so many Shakespearean parallels. Did anyone else pick up on that? I'm unsullied for the most part as far as Fire and Blood goes, so some of my impressions may be fleeting or wholly incorrect. Blackwoods and Brackens as Montagues and Capulets, called it. Two families feuding for ages with no true reconciliation or recollection of how it all began. Very much the vicious sin begets sin cycle. Okay, very good.
And of course you have, you know, speaking of that whole thing of we forget how it all began, think about that conversation with Rhaenys saying, look, there are a lot of points we could say are the beginning of this and nobody's going to remember at the end. We're just going to know that a war happened.
Right, right. And go back to Corliss too, right? What happened in detail doesn't matter, but it's like, do you remember the names?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
History remembers names. He's got a great voice.
The Gravediggers from Hamlet. There's a bit of back and forth between them regarding whether or not Ophelia deserves a Christian burial after dying at her own hand. Not unlike Jace and Rhaenyra's conversation, though with less comedy. A lot less comedy, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Hamlet's encounter with the Gravediggers also leads to the iconic to be or not to be, which could easily be parallel for Rhaenyra's path in this episode. Okay, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that at all, actually. And that is, I think that I want to hear, write in again, Denise, with a few more thoughts around this. I want to hear you talk a little bit more into this that idea. I think it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Daemon's dream at Harrenhal, coupled with the appearance of Alice Rivers, is similar to Macbeth.
Yeah.
Being haunted by Banquo, in part as a representation of his guilt, which ultimately is just part of the supernatural surroundings that keep him from attaining his goals. I like this. I like this a lot. It's very cool.
That's good stuff.
Because, yeah, Harrenhal is spooky AF. And he's certainly... Him seeing young Rhaenyra, Millie Alcock, was absolutely some guilty feelings, right? A little bit of Raven.
It's the first time we've seen him show regret of remorse.
Mm-hmm.
The entire show.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's interesting too, because then we see his nephew.
Because there's too many. There's too many things going on here.
Aegon's younger brother.
Oh, Aemond,
thank you. We see Aemond expressing his remorse and guilt to Sylvie. And so when he's less burdened with that, where Daemon is keeping it in and keeping and holding on to that stuff. And so now it's coming out in different manifestations.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it.
You know what else is coming out? I've decided to start going back through the Matt Smith era of Doctor Who, pulling clips that are like out of context Daemon. And putting them on.
Nice.
So right when the 11th Doctor first regenerates, he does this whole bit where like nobody can make him anything that he likes to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I put a whole meme together of like Daemon trying to get a good meal at Harrenhal. And he even says at one point, he's like, are you trying to poison me? And I was like, this is perfect. This is just the scene.
It's perfect. That's great. And lastly, perhaps Alice, like the three witches, will ultimately be the demise of Daemon. John, is that some hot lore?
That's hot lore summer.
Is that some waffer? What is it? What's your
waffo? Watch and find out.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't tell you I know how Damon is.
That's some waffle.
I'm not gonna say died, because maybe he doesn't die on screen. Sure. I don't know.
We're all mortal. He's mortal.
Yeah.
That's some hot waffle.
Sure is.
Does that work?
Some hot waffle. It sounds like we're making the Texas-shaped waffles we're talking about on Second Breakfast, right?
That's right. Switching quickly to the opening credits, Maureen D. on the Discord, the theme of weaving in the episode intro extending to young Rhaenyra stitching the head of Daenerys back on. All right, so she was just sort of calling out what Nancy had mentioned earlier, we're getting a lot of stuff. I think you need to stop skipping, John. You need to pay attention.
What do you mean? Oh, the stitch. I was like, what am I skipping?
to the tapestries.
Right. Right.
I always think of the, what is it? The Indiana Jones, which one was that in when they go to see the tapestries, when they go to the castle?
Oh, I don't know. I've only seen the second one actually in my adult life. I'm sure I've seen the other ones as a kid. But I've only seen Temple of Doom because I had to, again, screen that for my audio jobs.
I'm having an aneurysm.
I don't think you are. I think you're all right.
I'm shocked. Shocked. You've only seen the second one. My God, John.
Eventually, I'll watch
the other ones. What's wrong with your generation?
Well, have you seen Indiana Jones throughout my lifetime? It's not good.
Yeah, the third one was good. The first the new one, the second one had its.
I'm talking about the ones that have come out in my lifetime.
Those two are hot garbage. Oh, I'm going to get added now. I'm in trouble.
I know some people did like the most recent one.
Yeah. Production comments. Red Zippy 330 on the Discord. I'm thrilled to type. Quote: "It's a dark scene, but I can see. Thank the seven gods, I can see." I think you were also rejoicing that they fixed their production issues around
darkness. They finally got it.
I'm getting my new TV, by the way.
Oh, are you? When's that?
I'm super excited. It should arrive Saturday.
Very exciting.
I could not afford a OLED. That's just a crazy expensive
proposition. Yeah, you can find them used on sale sometimes, but it's tough. It's tough.
I'm not going to buy a used TV.
Especially because you got the burn-in with OLEDs, so you don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, we don't have big enough wall space in our house. We have a huge house, but we don't have the wall space for anything larger. Like, I got a 43-inch QLED. What brand I got. I think I got a TCL.
Okay.
Which it was a good price. It had good reviews. Like, it took me like weeks to figure out what to buy. And so, because our old Samsung, which has like a 1-inch bevel around it, and it's like it's very dark, so it was even worse. It was like darkness upon compounded darkness. So,
you know, it's interesting. I have my it is 4K, but I have my old 4K like regular LCD in my basement office now.
I
fired it up for the first time in a while recently, and I was like, man, the newer TVs just are a different level of stuff. Right.
And that's why I was even thinking, just if I just got a regular LED, that's going to be so much better than what I have now. So, which is just an old LED.
Yeah.
Basically. Anyway, Easter dragon eggs, quote unquote Easter, Cyrus Facepalm on Discord. For those who are wondering, it seems like the show is confirming that Dany's eggs are laid by Cyrax. This looks to be a quotation, possibly. It appears the show is making a major, if completely understandable, change from the book. Those are Dany's eggs, the episode director, Geeta Vincent Patel, told Mashable. All of us who work on this show are big Game of Thrones fans, so it was very exciting to shoot that scene. I'm not a fan of that theory because Dany's dragons look nothing like Cyrax. Maybe Vhagar will tell Cyrax, keep trying, Cyrax, eventually will look like you. There's lore in the books where the physical characteristics of dragons tend to match its mother in looks, not necessarily in the color or hue, but in terms of some key aesthetics. And we've got a whole bunch more of dragon stuff coming up as well, especially about dragon bonds and things like that. Nice. Any thoughts on Cyrax and eggs?
I'm fine with them making... I just think that you're going to have these member berries to fund the show, guys. You know, I mean, The same way that you're always going to have a Skywalker mentioned tangentially in Star Wars, right? You just need, you need a lightsaber in your Star Wars. You need, it's just, it's going to be there because you need somebody to point out the screen and do the Leo meme.
The newest trailer for Alien Romulus, so the newest film in that franchise, there's one blip of a sound from the motion tractor of the movie of Aliens. And when you hear that, man, it is so activating. And it's, they don't overblow it. They don't, you know, go crazy with it, but they give you that one little ping sound and it really does work. And I think it's fine. The thing that drove me crazy about Star Wars animated stuff was that it was like every episode, 8 or 9 times an episode.
First of all, the sound, like, why wouldn't it sound the same in the same universe?
Yeah, but they were using sounds from different ships for different, every time, and it was like the same
exact sound. A laser sounds like a laser in Star Wars. I'm going to push back on that
one. They looped the sound, like they actually took the sound itself and not even made a new sound for it, but like took the original recording sound.
All right.
It was just too much.
Mr. Cranky Pants, let's move on.
Put Grandpa to bed. there was something else I was going to say too. Moving on. Abby said by email, this is Abby's email, about those eggs. Oh, I know what I was going to say. I'll finish her email and then I'll make my point. About those eggs, I am not a huge fan of the show theory, but I understand why they went with it. You got to give a wink, wink from time to time to Game of Thrones show fans, and it kind of works. It also says to me that they will not adapt anything earlier in the timeline. Egg number 4, is there a chance for Rhaena to finally get a dragon? Bela hinted as much when they parted. And this was my point. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Was I actually don't like the director confirmed it, or that they confirmed the Eric and Eric, who was who fell on the sword.
Mm.
I liked the ambiguity and I liked the engagement. Like, we were all like, well, is it this and this reason why? And blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
It's
you know, I like the discourse.
Listen, guys. We do a podcast where we enjoy the show and we do this out of the joy of it. And all these companies, they go out and they're like, let's make an official podcast. And they totally forget why people listen to podcasts, which is so that they don't just get the show sold to them, but instead get to hear an honest critique of it.
Theorize and Stargaze, right. And yeah.
Right. There's something about the hodgepodge nature of podcasts, the sort of seat of your pants nature of podcasting, that I think that these official podcasts are kind of just like totally missing the mark on. Don't even get me started on the rewatch my old show thing with all the casts of like the B-list actors who go back to their old shows.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'm like, all right, all enough of shows. That. Everyone, go back to work.
They muck up our ratings, right?
I know. You know,
for our show reactions. Because they're in the same category on Apple Podcasts. Drive me nuts.
Leave it to the pros, guys.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, Heron Hall. Davey Mack on the Discord. I love the meal at Heron Hall and the awkward back and forth. That was a lot of fun. The humor was perfect. Simon the Castellane was an absolute breath of fresh air. Yep. And just a perfect counterbalance to Daemon's seriousness and stalking around the castle and stuff.
And this was a fun subversion of expectations, right? Because looking back, it makes sense. Like, obviously, Larys is going to move somebody, rub somebody the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
He's constantly a weirdo to everyone, and he's constantly clearly out for his own ends. And I do think that something that we learned about Larys through this whole interaction is that he's very smart, but he's not as smart as he thinks he is. And people notice that he's slimy.
Right.
Anyway, that's my Larys spiel.
Ready for some girl talk?
I'm ready for girl talk.
Red Zippy 330, part of her email. A quick email today. Excellent episode. I love that the writers gave Alicent and Rhaenyra a chance to talk about what Viserys said on the deathbed. If it were to happen in Game of Thrones, it would have taken an entire season to land. Now, Alicent has the weight of doubt added to her burden. As Emma Darcy said in the inside the episode, it moved Rhaenyra to choosing her title instead of just inheriting it. Her father did want her to be queen. That's an interesting thing. I didn't listen to that. I like this, that Rhaenyra now, she might have had, there was always maybe like a 1 or 2% doubt. Like, did he really give me up on the, on his deathbed? But now it's, she's clear, and she, that's going to change her, her positioning with all of this stuff.
Okay. But at the same time, do you think if, and here's a real question. Do you think if Allison didn't say the prince that was promised thing, and Rhaenyra walked away thinking that her dad actually did disinherit her, do you think she would have considered surrendering to avoid the war? Like, as much as she found personal joy and personal fulfillment in this, do you think this was a net negative for the realm?
I think that's a good point. That's a really good point. My question, while they were having the conversation up until the point where the whole, you know, Song of Ice and Fire clues got dropped, was how the hell is she going to get out of there? And I think that, and then that would have had big repercussions, right? And I don't think she would have gotten out of the city. She might have got it out of the Sept safely, but like getting out of the city, I don't think she would have made it. And so that counterbalanced Alicent, because now that she's like, you got to get out of here, because they both know that, oh, you know, something's wrong. But what if they didn't say that?
Right.
And what if Rhaenyra did get away and she was able to get back? Would she pursue as strongly a course of war or whatever her stratagems are? I think she would always be compromised. I think there would always be some doubt that would affect her decision-making. Yeah, I think so.
I think she might, because we've already seen her express doubt, and clearly after Luke died, she had more resolve to fight. But if she gets here, because I don't think she ever believed that Viserys disinherited her. Sure, she doubted.
Right.
But when she gets here, I think she would have walked away being like, all right, well, you know what? If my dad really did disinherit me for whatever reason, maybe because I didn't visit him for so long. Like, remember, they had to introduce Viserys to him for the first time.
Yeah.
Baby Viserys. I think there's a real chance she goes back to her war-hungry Black Council and says, look, I'm sorry for wasting your time. I'm going to go pledge fealty to Aegon just to get this
save
over
the realm.
I don't want to fight dragon versus dragon. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, she's like, well, this sucks, guys. I mean, you're going to take my inheritance right out from underneath me? Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
and give it to Aegon,
for the realm,
who we know is, you know, bloodthirsty.
Right. So now you have the awful Aegon. You have her having a rightful claim.
Yeah.
And you have her blatantly seeing the hypocrisy of Allison.
Yeah.
It's a problem. It's a problem.
And people are going to, people are going to lose their lives because of it. Nate on the Discord, Rhaenyra's right. Allison's is not. And Allison knows that. Yeah, for sure. Abby by email, we got a cool scene with fave characters interacting with another with each other in great disguise. Rhaenyra looked amazing in that outfit, so I didn't need to be extremely smart. It made good television. Agreed. It was. I was really amped up during that whole thing because I had no idea what that was going to result in and how they were going to get out of it. Athena A on Discord, I know Rhaenyra was likened to the conciliator Targaryen, but I was a little disappointed that she didn't offer Alicent anything to barter with. That's an interesting point. She was just like, can there be peace? But then the only option she gave was put me on the throne or fight. No middle ground. Like, hey, marry our kids. Otherwise, I like that they had this conversation. A lot of times you ask the question, if people could have a frank conversation, could they come to an agreement? And in this case, both sides have hurt each other too much for that to happen.
Yeah.
As always, Rhaenyra should be queen. She just has this gravitas and rationality that is so refreshing. Oh, Rhaenys. As always, Rhaenys should be queen. God, I can't even read these names. She just has the gravitas and rationality that is so refreshing. She doesn't hold back. 100% agree. I'm here for the reign of Rhaenys.
Yeah, and just to respond quickly, these people will never be able to live in King's Landing together at peace, right? Like, they just will never trust each other. Someone's always going to be around the corner with a dagger, and you can't live like that. So war is here. All right, David, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we will resume our conversation.
We'll be right back with more House of the Dragon. We've got more feedback with House of the Dragon.
Okay, let's get into some character talk. Team Green, Allison, Vanessa on the Discord said, Allison thinks the entire affair was a sin, and now she's being punished for it by what happened to Helena. Yep, that's, you know, she tried to confess, but her dad just didn't want to hear it. Aegon, Nancy M, this is our hand of the pod. Episode 1, I had good thoughts about Aegon. Last episode, they started to waver, but I gave him the benefit of the doubt. He had just lost his son, his legacy, and who wouldn't want to stand up to Otto? Well, after episode 3, he's definitely back in my bad books. Who hires their drinking and carousing buddies to be their security?
A 20-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever watch Entourage, John?
Entourage. No, I just know Michael Scott saying it like that on The Office.
Okay.
That's it.
It was a fun show. It was a very interesting look into having an entourage like that. Helena, Abby says, what do we think of, what do we think Helena is forgiving Allison for? The fling with Kristen Cole, the crowning of Aegon, getting him in the position of king was indirectly the reason why her kid was murdered, or for some other sin. She was never warm towards her mother before, always avoiding being touched, etc., or something bigger yet to occur. And I think we talked about this on the main pod that this
could be a thing. I love this idea that she's forgiving her in advance.
Yeah. Because Helena's living in this past, present, future smear of time thing.
And of course, Alicent is super good at making sure that whatever she hears will be molded to what she wants it to be.
Abby, by email, I will not add anything else about Helena. I like Nancy's interpretation of the forgiveness being for the ordeal of the funeral. Okay, so Nancy had said something about the small folk and the mothers who lose their babies. Then again, it's Helena, so it can be something else entirely. Fascinating character. I do love that some things are left ambiguous. I do too. I like a little mystery. There was the whole thing about things floating in the air the episode before last, that we don't have it here and it's still sort of left ambiguous. I like it when they do that. I like a little questioning.
Right.
Speaking of which, Vanessa on Discord, when Helena looked up at the people, she saw snowflakes. She is a dreamer, so maybe they will make her a Cassandra, i.e. say more things to more than one person, and they will not think that she's just an enduring mystery per Aegon.
Mm.
And I truly think that Allison was checking in on Helena, as it only has been a few days. I'm not sure if she blames her mother for being with Sir Kristen Cole or for making her do the funeral procession. She was talking about it and no longer being sad about the murder of her son. I don't know how she is walking around, but Allison thought it was for being in bed with Sir Kristen. But can the queen please have guards? I don't understand why we never see her with anyone, especially after the murder. Seriously.
Right.
Big problems. And that Aegon not only let Kristen Cole, who is responsible for, you know, the posting of the guards and the behavior and he's the captain of their ship, right? He's ultimately responsible. Yep. He really failed upwards, right? He got promoted to Hand of the King. What is that called when you constantly fit? Is it, Peter Principle or something?
You get promoted to the point of incompetence.
That's
to the
right.
level of your incompetence.
Which is, I think, what Otto sees, which is why he says, you're going to regret this.
So, right. Otto is very competent at getting exactly what he wants done.
Speaking of Kristen, Kyle M. by email, Kristen Cole, I know he has other responsibilities at the hand now, but I still feel it speaks poorly of his command that Rhaenyra got that close to Alicent and that Aegon was stumbling around a brothel, whipping open curtains that any reasonably competent assassin could have been hiding behind with a sword to run through the dumb king's throat. It's no small feat to be considered the most incompetent character on the show, but man, this handsome goon is making a heck of a run at it. This is what drove me crazy was Aegon running around with, what did you say, the Bros Guard? Was that what you called it?
Yeah, I think the Bros Guard.
The Bros Guard.
Maybe the Boys Guard.
No, I think it was the Bros Guard. But without any sober, there was no designated driver with this crew, right? There was no responsible person who like is an actual real soldier thinking about this stuff. There's no Secret Service sweeping the area beforehand.
Right.
And you're at war and you've already had two assassination attempts, one each way. It's wild to me that they're this loose with their security. DJ Miwa on the Discord was listening to the pod, and I think Kristen was being utterly naive by thinking that killing Rhaenyra would, quote-unquote, end the war. Firstly, Jace would stake his claim, but more importantly, there would be absolutely nothing stopping Daemon. This is a really good point. Nothing stopping Daemon from doing even more Daemon things. Even alive, Rhaenyra is barely keeping him in check. First off, good to hear from you, DJ Miwa. We haven't seen you much around, but I know you've been active on the Discord recently. Who is in DJ Miwa is a lore master, so thank you for that.
Oh, yeah.
But this is a really, really good point. The only reason Daemon hasn't gone and nuked King's Landing is because Rhaenyra stopped him.
Yeah, I totally barely agree. I think he would have said, everyone who has a fighting dragon, follow me. Let's go kill Vhagar, pin her down, and then we'll go and burn the Red Keep until only the chair is left, as he would call it, the chair.
As Rhaenys says, if only you were the king, right? That little line.
Yep. So. Yep.
All right, Amond, Sid S. We've got a nice, good email here. Hey, fellas, mandatory longtime lurker, first-time poster here. Hey, Sid, thanks for writing in. Good to hear from you. I've been listening to you guys since The Mandalorian. Oh, nice. Which I loved your coverage of. I kept up with you on Loki all the way through. Your commentary in Shogun got me through a maddening 40-minute commute to work every weekday morning. Cheers to you guys and your dedication. Cheers to you, Sid, for hanging out with us. And it's certainly great to have you here. Sid has some things about not being able to offer a subscription, support a subscription at this moment. Sid, you're listening. That's all that matters. And that goes just for anybody. We all have our different circumstances and whether we can subscribe or not, seasons pass, regular subscription. What's important to us is that you're here hanging out for everybody.
And absolutely.
Those who
you're always welcome to come around.
That's right. And thanks for writing in. Getting into his email, ring kissing aside, I have a theory about the scene in episode 3 I think you might find interesting as it relates to this most recent episode. As you recounted, the Watchers bearing witness to the chaos of an undisciplined Greened Council, you noted Amond licking his chops. There's an interesting dynamic happening in the subtext that you didn't mention as it relates to the one-eyed angry boy's demeanor. When Crispy presents his plan to ride out to the Riverlands and to add to their host as they venture forth to Harrenhal, Amond is playing with a coin in his hand. Oh, this could be interesting. The last time we saw Crispy discuss war tactics with Vhagar's alleged master, Aemon was proposing that exact plan to Kristen as Aemon moved coins about the map strewn in front of them. Ah, this is really good. This is a good pickup. Then suddenly, as the council meeting to which Aemon was on time and Crispy was late, Crispy, likely feeling the pressure of the ring of golden hands around his neck, bud, what is you doing, presents the plan as his own to the council, taking the credit for a glorious and clever plan from Amond right in front of him. This is a really good pickup. I totally missed this. I remember him playing with the coin because I remember him. I remember the scene of him like holding it in front of his eye, and that was a very strong scene. All right, continuing with the email. Adding insult to injury, Amond is excluded from his own glorious plan after being tasked with guarding King's Landing, as if receiving no credit for concocting the plan wasn't enough to hurt Aemon's ego. I like to think this tiny detail is the epitome of the craven opportunism the Green Council was essentially established on. Backstabbing as they reach for power, it was a nice touch, in my opinion. Of great consequence? I have no idea. I didn't read the books, but perhaps Crispy's transparent shame and fear of losing what he's taken for himself will continue to fracture relationships with the very people who put him in this position. It's poetic, in my opinion. Anyway, Thanks for taking the time to read my wordy analysis of the moment in this latest episode. Great episode. Fasten my seatbelt. Can't wait to see where the story takes us. Thanks again for your hard work that you pour into your content. Sincerely appreciated. Please don't stop. Sid, do not stop sending in these emails and these kind of takes. This is quality. This was really good.
John, quality. I really love... I really love this take because it makes me rethink about this scene where, you know, when Aegon says, oh, so you'll take Vhagar then.
Mm-hmm.
And Kristen says, no, Vhagar and Aemond will stay at the city to defend it. And Aemond looks at him. He's silent for a second. And he just goes, good.
He does, right?
He gives him one like, good.
Yeah, I completely that whole scene makes sense now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so much better.
It was a little weird to me at the time, so I appreciate you bringing this to light, so this makes a lot more sense now.
Good stuff. Red Zippy, again by email, my take on the full frontal nudity of Aemon was that it demonstrated that Aemon's armor is internal. It is a state of mind. He does not need to wear his cloak, sword, or eye patch to step into the role of warrior, capital W. The actor was able to convey that Aemon can move from vulnerability to strength with a mindset and self-control without any of the quote-unquote dressing of a king. That is also a very interesting take, and I think that's spot on, because he just stands up and he's like, and he actually puts his crotch in front of his brother's face.
Yeah. And I mean, look, it's like if you shit your pants in public, you don't want to clench because everyone's going to know it's you. You got to walk out with pride.
Yeah, you've been on a poop train recently.
I think that's like my third poop story this week. It's because I have toddlers.
Yes, it's true. You're in the phase. Yep, you're in the phase.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say this the other day too on the second breakfast thing. Just because you're quote unquote potty training now doesn't mean that it's over or you're finished. It actually extends for many years yet. There's a lot of bathroom stuff still to go.
Don't worry. I wasn't expecting somebody to hand me the certificate of you're done parenting.
Yeah, exactly, right? There's this whole expectation like you're done now. Anyway, it's ridiculous.
Yep.
Carrying on, Laris. Abby, by email, I do find Laris a very interesting villain. We really can't divine what exactly his goals are, but he's a master manipulator. He did get a promotion this episode. He will, of course, do what he always did, but in addition, he now gets a seat at the king's small council as Master of Whispers, as Varys had the same job description in the more recent, or the earlier Game of Thrones. The seat was vacant because Viserys didn't want one. That's interesting. So he'll have one of those little marble orbs to put into the little pocket.
Oh, you gotta have an orb.
Cool.
I mean, Somebody said it's like if you remove it, they disappear.
Right.
they teleport away.
Kevin C. This is about characters not likely on Team Green. Kevin C. email. I'm sure I'm not the only one to point this out, but the serving girl who is called over in the Ulf scene in the brothel, isn't that Diana? The handmaid who Aegon raped in the previous season, the one Alicent paid off and sent away, seems like it focuses on her a little too much for it to be coincidence. I see a striking resemblance between the two characters. And Nancy M. looks like Diana, who took the moon tea from Alicent. Da-da-da-da-da.
Yep.
So,
yeah, that's her. That's her. Okay. I mean,
Yeah, you called
it. I put it in her character entry in the show guide that she shows up in season two in a pub.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. We're in a tavern. I think I wrote tavern because that feels more true to this universe.
All right. Let's switch over to Team Black and Damon. Chris M. On their email. I've kind of had a different takeaway from Damon's taking Harrenhal, which feeds into the friction of episode two. My read was that he's trying to establish his own base of support. All right. This is good. I like this take. In my opinion, the show seems to be making this messier, like War of the Two and a Half Monarchs, maybe plus another half, depending on what's up with Aemond. I like this. The main factions are Aegon and Rhaenyra, sure, but Daemon and Aemond are not 100% loyal and are setting up their own mini factions. I don't think it's a conscious thing that Daemon's part, but he's just been booted out of the Black Council for being loose with his commands and has decided to claim his own seat of power just in case. The way he keeps trying to insert himself as Rhaenyra's equal rather than just her consort made me double down on this take. In my opinion, this sort of friction makes more sense for certain future events down the line. Some hot lore there, some hot waffo. The way the book has Daemon and Rhaenyra, faithful consort general from day one. It really emphasizes how fragile and tentative both coalitions are under the surface rather than a simple and clean black versus greens. And I would add that Rhaenys even says that. She says specifically everywhere he goes, he needs to be, you know, the man. I forget what she how she phrases it, but basically says he's got to be the big man wherever he goes. He's got to be the
he's a maher, top dog. Right? Like that's the word.
Mm-hmm. Say the word again. I missed
maher,
it.
You know?
Mm, I don't know that word.
It's a big shot. It's a Yiddish word.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Got it. Like a Kwisatzotarek.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Like the Baba Ganoush.
Yes.
I'm just going to say a different word every time you bring up Dune. Maybe one day I'll read it.
Skibbity bebop. All right. I like this take, and I think Chris is very right. I think Daemon isn't taking this for Rhaenyra. I think he's taking it for himself.
Yeah, it's tough to say, especially without spoilers. But I think that
Waffo,
but also as far as what we know now, I don't think that somebody's ego disappears just because circumstances change a little bit, right?
Agreed. Like agreed.
He's not changed that much. I think he matured a little bit through his marriage to Lena, but he's still the same Daemon we saw in early season one.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and the same one who grabbed her by the throat and same one who was knocking cups around. So that's all still
look, there. He's got the same core. He's learned to dress it up a little better.
Mm-hmm. All right. Kathy by email, not specific to this week at all. Just had to give a giggle for myself. I don't know if anyone who's watched The Crown is also finding it pretty funny that Matt Smith is kind of playing Prince Philip again, but with dragons. A very dominant type of man with a wife more powerful than him. Daemon struggling with his place just one step behind her. I'm not complaining. He's very good at being petulant and petty. This is a good take too. I don't think you watched The Crown. Did you, John?
I did not. I tried watching a couple episodes. It just wasn't for me.
Sure.
I just, you know, it's 2024. Stop having monarchs, England. I mean, get over it.
Says the man who's doing three podcasts a week on House of the Dragon.
Oh, you know what? It's all fake. Just like the English monarch should be.
Keep throwing those darts at England, John.
I think I threw darts at Canada, Europe generally, and England today. And I'm.
Oh, by the way, happy Canada Day. Take off, you hosers.
Eh? Oh, it's happy Canada. It's Canada Day. Oh boy, maybe I shouldn't have taunted them about their Tim Hortons today.
You were petulant on the script today. I like this take. It's very good. Matt Smith was amazing. The Crown is an amazing series. The early seasons, I think I dropped off at around, I think, 4 or something. But yeah, this dynamic of being in a patriarchal society where he has to be the number two relative. So yeah, it's definitely a role that he's played before. And I think he's bringing some of that experience with him. A note from the hand of the pod. Go to the show notes under episode guide for season one for a synopsis of the book by Gina McIntyre's House of the Dragon, Inside the Creation of a Targaryen Dynasty. In the book is this quote from the showrunner Ryan Condal that the show exactly has how right Marilyn is. Matt Smith's work as Prince Philip on The Crown made Condal think he'd be perfect for Daemon. Oh, okay. This is nice. This is some serious confirmation. He did a lot of intricate and subtle work on that show, playing a member of the royal house who constantly find himself as the also-ran the second in line. All right.
I like
some,
it.
You should maybe just go back and watch the Matt Smith episodes of The Crown.
I've watched some of it. I see what you're saying. And also, like, you got to remember, I watched 3 seasons of Matt Smith as the Doctor on Doctor Who. So I know the subtlety.
That's a big equate.
I know. Yeah, but at the same time, I know that he has the subtlety.
Right.
The Doctor is such a... I know everyone looks at it as like camp, but like, it is a hard role to play.
It's true.
It is a really hard role to play. Mm-hmm. you have to kind of mimic, yeah, like 60 years of acting, mm-hmm. but you also have to make it your own.
The tiny whininess of the doctor, right?
Right, he's, right.
You've got to incorporate all of that.
You have to be otherworldly yet relatable. You have to be traumatized yet fun. It's mm-hmm. it's such a wild range. And I actually think Matt Smith is one of the best people who ever captured that emotional range.
Nice. I believe that we took Nancy's, because so Hand of the Pod, Nancy, wrote an article summarizing this book. And we put that in the show guide, but I believe somebody took the link today and put it in the open Discord, because I think that you can read that article for free. Mm-hmm. I think we made that one. And that's going to go up. We're actually putting together like a blog site where we can have articles, written articles and stuff like that. And it's definitely going to go up in that. So look for that. We'll have some more information later in the season once we get that fired up. Moving on, Missaria. John P. Y'all keep saying Missaria isn't a book yet.
John, thank you. I said I would credit you on the feedback pod. Thank you for correcting. Missaria is a book character. I don't know why I started calling her not a book character. She is a book character.
Kyle M. Regarding Missaria. Say what you will about Missaria, but the woman is efficient. Also, do not say anything bad about her. I will get very angry. She might be my favorite character on the show now. I love the fact, and he continues on about the fact that he loves that she went back and parlayed the warning of the guards into a position at court. So very yep. cool.
It's a Missaria good negotiation.
Missaria would be a tremendous influencer. That's true. Very possible.
She'd have that riz.
My cat is stepping on my keyboard, so if that goes anywhere, apologize. Stop.
I think I should name my next. I want a cat next. I've had dogs my whole life.
Oh, yes.
I think next time I get a pet, I'm going to get a cat. And I think I'm going to name it after one of the dragons in House of the Dragon.
Oh, I like that. That would be very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Team Black Rhaenyra, Alicia on the Discord. Rhaena. Sorry. My apologies. The underdevelopment of Rhaena and Baela is one of my biggest peeves of last season. Glad they're taking a more prominent role now, but we missed out on a lot, so they feel a little underformed. John, do you have any comments about Rhaena and Baela?
I agree, but I think I think all of the kids were a little underformed, and that's mm-hmm. okay, because now we're starting to focus on them here. Now that the war is fully going, I think we're going to have more time with them, and we're going to have a good time getting to know them.
In this war. Yeah. It was hard, too, because we had to move season one around a lot, and they were little, right? They were, right. you know, still
and actors, and there were three sets of actors.
Right. Right.
I believe, for some of these characters at least.
Abby on the Discord, Rhaena not having a tryout with Sea Smoke is a good point. We still don't know how much of what exactly is going on with the Dragon Bonds. Maybe she didn't try because she was forever bitter about losing Vhagar, and it never crossed her mind to try. Also, it's a two-way thing, question mark. It's not just the writer who picks a random dragon and hops on. The dragon in question has a choice. These mm-hmm. creatures have minds and moods of their own. And there was a whole bunch of conversation about like, yeah, what's going on with dragon riders and their bonds, and you know, what happens with dragons if their rider has died. And I think we have some Laenor stuff here.
Yeah, I just want to say Rhaena yeah. could have tried to get Vhagar before, you know, before her cousin, but
right.
she just didn't. And that's,
she just didn't.
You know, I do think that perhaps she's a bit overcautious with dragons. Mm. At the same time, I don't want to walk up to Vhagar and be like, let me on you.
Not now, certainly. Yeah. But yeah, even in general, I mean, it took Aemon quite a lot to muster up courage, right?
Yeah. He almost got thrown off.
Yeah. So more about Laenor. My only thought is if Rhaena goes to Pentos, she can find out what happened to Laenor, as they were obviously teasing that in the scene right before, showing his dragon being restless. Thoughts on that? Is that some hot lore, or are we...
It's not hot lore. Here's the problem, is that okay. The book killed Laenor at the time
straight
that
up.
Dead. His death was faked in the show.
Okay.
Yeah, just dead. He was just murdered. It didn't, okay. nobody knew, which in the show you could read it as, well, the death faking worked, right?
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, we don't have anything else to go on afterward.
Right.
So here's the fan theory, and I think you may have removed a comment about this. But the fan theory now is, well, if Sea Smoke is suddenly restless, does that mean that Leonor died in Essos?
I thought I left that comment in. Did I exit out?
It might be in a different part.
Yeah.
No, I see that later, actually. I see it in the dragon section, but we can talk about it now. What do you think? You think Leonor's dead now? Honest speculation, like it's not in the book?
Look, the whole Sea Smoke thing, the whole question, they're absolutely playing with it. These guys are playing at a level where you don't put that little stuff in unless there's some kind of hook.
Yeah.
And I think they're raising the question what it actually ends up being. I have no ability to predict that other than they're raising a point and it's going to get some answer to this question of what happens to a dragon rider and their dragon has got to get resolved. And I was wondering too, is it geographic? How far can they feel the bond? Maybe it's you know, so far away. Maybe he's really far away and
yeah.
Maybe that's why Sea Smoke is. So regardless, they put it there for a reason that I'm 100% sure about.
All right. Very good.
Melissa by email. Hi, Lorehounds. I hope you will talk about this minor point that confused me in episode 3. This is all about where the kids are going and going to Pentos and the Vale and all that stuff. And I think we worked it out, right?
We did talk about that on the podcast. We have we have a stopover, right? We have a layover flight here with dragons. So you've got Reyna taking the kids to the Vale, leaving Joffrey and his dragon there, then sailing across the sea.
Right.
I think that was, they did say it kind of confusingly in the show, but I think that's where we're at.
Yeah. And that way, a dragon in the Vale and the kids and the eggs for lineage sake are in Pentos, far from action.
And another dragon in Essos with them too. And not a fighting size dragon, but so there's going to be one dragon left in the Vale, one dragon sent over to Essos with them.
That's right. All right, Abby by N, I'm getting, starting to lose it here.
We're almost done here.
We're almost
done. I crossed out other things.
Thank you. By email, I do look forward to how they explain and what they do. And to be clear, if we're crossing out stuff, it's like minor.
Yeah. Stuff. It was literally just like if two people made the same point, we picked one. Sorry.
I do look forward to how they explain and what they do with the new characters, Hugh, Ulf, Alan, Adam, that are familiar to book readers, but we can't know for sure how they're going to be developed in the show. I would also be interested to hear more Valyrian being spoken. Getting some dragon names in Valyrian would be nice. I mean, those who have common tongue names like Moondancer and Seasmoke, Sunfire and Dreamfire do have Valyrian names. Vesper.
Don't try it.
Okay.
Don't try it. Let's just move on.
And I remember I lived in Budapest for a number of years. Man, trying to learn Hungarian, I'm like making my eyes cross.
I speak one line in Lithuanian. Do you know that?
I do not know that.
I can say, I'm sorry, I don't speak Lithuanian.
That is a tongue twister. That is a good one.
I don't remember why I learned that.
Yeah, that is a very strange reason.
Anybody speak Lithuanian in the audience?
Moving on to, well, we check the podcast thing to see if we have listeners there. Dragons, Vanessa, Discord. George required that dragons look very different, and they have definitely succeeded. I think that Rhaenyra and Daemon know their dragons by their cries. They have only shown Daemon specifically calling Caraxes. He just shows up when he needs him, which is how it seemed to work in the books. Though they have only shown Daemon specifically calling Caraxes. Yeah, not calling Caraxes, right? He just shows up, right? That's what I'm getting here. I think it's implied that Rhaenyra has the same control with Syrax. A dragon's personality is said to reflect that of its riders. Rhaenyra is very connected to her dragon as she started riding at 6.
Mm-hmm.
Rhaenyra hasn't been out. They haven't shown us her out. Oh, no, she was when she was looking for Luke. So she was out.
Riding. Yeah.
Yeah.
Doing a little riding.
Sadie on the Discord. What if Leonor actually died? Is that why Sea Smoke is acting up? Marilyn, our favorite Tolkien scholar on the Discord. I'm interested to hear that not all dragons are quote unquote fighting dragons. Who gets to decide that, and what other kinds of dragons can there be? Or is this more of a question of all dragons are naturally fierce, but only some of them are or can be trained to fight with humans on their back? And we've got another. So those are two separate points. So yeah, we kind of talked about Laenor and Sea Smoke. So got some hot lore there.
Yeah, and I think the dragon thing got settled in the Discord. They're just saying that they're not ready to fight yet. Like they are too small.
Got it.
They're babies, right? Because they were hatched with the babies,
right? And then the baby and the dragon grow up together, conceivably, right. and in parallel. All right, Nate on the Discord. Thinking about Baelon or dragon, you'd want to assess enemy dragons before any combat. Even if all the dragons are eventually fighting dragons, Baela's dragon is big enough to fight and could have roasted Crispy Cole and his group. But there's a reason she's been given recon missions and told to stay far, far away from any serious dragons. I think of it like a reconnaissance plane versus a fighter jet. A Vhagar or a Caraxes would easily take down some of the smaller, younger dragons. So for Baela's instructions were stay high and far away. But when she saw the glint, and then there was some question about this, like how did she see that glint? I think her dragon saw it and turned its head, and then she followed the line of sight and then saw that glint, and it was too far to know what that was, so she had to go down and get a closer look. Now, did she, you know, have a little fun getting Gawain to piss his pants? I think so.
Oh, he definitely pissed his pants. Like, I'm so convinced on that.
Yeah. And she had fun chasing him, right? She was like, let's go see what these guys are. Because it was not a big, you know, it wasn't a big group. It wasn't a large army that she was coming down on. It was just a handful of riders, and she needed to identify who they were. So it was exceeding her orders a little bit, you know, to get the good intel, to actually look, know.
Not that more was. Than her dad.
Right.
Somebody called her Damon Jr. on Twitter today, and I was like,
no.
I don't think so. No. I don't think so there. I mean, look, she is Damon's daughter, but I don't think so.
And it's a good point, though, that Nate brings up about, you know, recon and understanding the role of observe and report versus engagement and picket lines and all these kinds of things. So, yeah, I think the showrunners are smart enough to work this stuff. Kyle M's email about the Twin Bowl burial, Eric and Arik Cargill. I chose to believe that they were buried in the same grave because none of the characters on the show knew which one was which either. Ouch.
I like it. They're like, I don't know. We can't figure it out at this point. So,
right. Last topic, poison pee leftovers from previous episodes. John M on Patreon. Okay. The dust in the air brought out two things to mind. Ashfall from the dragons burning everything down and snowfall warning of winter. Remember in episode one, there was a line about summer ending. That combined with the Starks keeping a close eye on the wall tells me that this will be a double threat. The southern kingdoms in flames from war and dragons versus the northern kingdoms holding back the others. I have yet to read the book, so I may be completely wrong. I like it. Seems good. Yeah. There's a lot of rhyming stuff there.
Yeah.
Abby gets the last question comment from a Discord note. As a book reader, I'm unnaturally not up in arms about the production choices, as I think it doesn't change the outcome. So this goes back to the larger issue of inspiration versus adaptation,
and blood and cheese.
Blood and cheese and reinterpretations of these things. Nor diminishes the tragedy of it. People are equating dislike informed by an overhyped expectation, methinks, with bad writing and bad acting. We agreed last season that this is an adaptation, retelling of a book written from some very biased viewpoints. Baffling how now there is this particular scene that people are wanting to be exactly like in the book.
Yeah, again, I don't want it exactly like the book. I would have liked the choice element. I think that was... That, you know, if we're talking about like the recipe for a good adaptation, I think that was one of the seasonings that I was missing.
Right.
You know, season it with a little extra psychological horror.
There you go. Weave in some more choices. Put some more hearts into conflict with each other.
Yep.
some more cereal in Saturday mornings.
Well, this was fun. We did our first feedback episode for House of the Dragon because we just had too many.
We did. And we have a hand of the pod who's doing a great job of plucking great comments from the Discord as well. So that's been fun. This is a good length too. I like this. I think it makes sense for the show.
Yeah. So, I mean, what are we up to, like 4 hours of just main pods now for House of the Dragon plus another 15-minute exclusive one.
Yeah, something like that.
Jesus. All right.
Not including the show.
By the seven.
Poured into the...
By the seven. All right, let's get into our programming notes here. I'm going to go to our schedule. Our schedule we have on the Discord server. You can get that physically, or not physically, but digitally. You can read it on the Discord server. House of the Dragon, you're here. You know what's going on there. We got the weekly recap. We've got the hot takes on Sunday nights. We've got the feedback episode now. Very exciting stuff. The Acolyte is still going strong. We just had a new episode last night. It was really good. It had a lot of juicy lore. I can't wait to hear what Alicia has to say about it, because she knows a lot more about that than I do.
And you've challenged me to show back up on the pod. So
You had some takes I wanted to take issue with. So I haven't had enough arguing with you this week.
We'll have some fun. I have some thoughts.
I stitched together a 4-part recorded 2.5-hour second breakfast. Love that it. Is now out for Patreon and Supercast subscribers. And that was a lot of fun.
That was crazy. That was a crazy recording.
Can I just say, you used the term raw dogging and I was not expecting it. And
anything can happen on like second it. Breakfast.
I didn't like it. And you didn't use it in an inappropriate way either. I didn't know that you could use it in an inappropriate way. So I'm just very disturbed. We talked about poop. We talked about potty training. We talked about hotel breakfast. We talked. I debuted my song.
Yes, that's right.
Summer. I even put it up for download for everybody in the attachments to that episode. So we're having a great time here. And 11Z's. We're recording that tomorrow. So I got the day off. We're celebrating the 4th of July with some 11Z's on The Fifth Element, which is an absurd movie that I cannot believe I watched.
Absolutely, utterly absurd.
Rings and Rituals next week. I'll be back with Marilyn on her feed to talk about the music of the Rings of Power season one. And the Star Wars Complete Canon Timeline podcast is not only just doing the Acolyte this week, but also doing an episode on the canon ancient myths of Batuu, which I have no idea what that means. But soon I will, and so will you. Radioactive Ramblings is continuing through The Boys. This week doing season 4, episode 5, Beware of the Jabberwock, My Son. It's a wild title, and I know why it's that now. Okay. And that's it for what's happening right now. Probably Howard and Wool Shift Dust are on break, but they will be back soon.
Can I plug The Bear?
No.
We're going to, you, me, and Ron are going to do a bear thing once you're caught up. And I have we're going to do a one shot on it. We're going to talk about some themes and stuff like that. Plus all the alien content that I've got coming up next month. So. Hang tight, because we got a new movie coming out. That's it for me.
All right.
Cool.
You want to do these shout-outs here?
No, you do them. You do them.
Okay, I'll do it with my music. You told me to get music, so now I have music, and I'm going to torment you with it every time.
It's fine.
All right.
I like it. People like it, I think.
Do they? Nobody's mentioned it, so maybe they haven't gotten that far into the 2.5
Look, if they didn't like
breakfast.
It, we'd hear about it. That's true. That's the truth.
Let's see. Which one do we want? No. Let's do the other one.
It's a little too hokey.
It's a little. Yeah. I'm going to delete that from the soundboard. All right. Or I have.
Oh, there you go.
That's nice. That's real nice.
Smooth.
Discord server boosters. I even muted my mic because I got too close to it.
This is John Lorehound coming to you at the 11 o'clock hour of the Smooth Jazz Radio Podcast.
This is too late. All right. Gnarls, Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Doob 71, Captain Gingy 56, and Athena A. Lore Masters, Sam Martian, Michael G., Michelle E., David W., Brian P., SC, Peter OH, Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Doob 71, Brian 80, 63, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Eric F., Matthew M., Sarah M., DJ Miwa, Andra B., Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T., Alex V., Aaron T., Sub-Zero, Aaron K., Dally V., Mothership 61, Gnarls, Aaron, I'm skipping people now, Kathy W., Stuart B., and Adrian. Thank you all for dealing with our ridiculous humor at this hour. It's Hot Lore Summer. I feel like we're becoming unhinged now.
We are. It's we're having fun. We're having a good time.
All right, everyone.
We do it all for you.
We'll see you for episode 4.
Bye.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
The wheel of time turns, and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. In one podcast, called The Lorehounds by Some, a weekly recap with tons of analysis, two Wheel of Time superfans will lead you through a world of powerful magic, tricky prophecies, and cutthroat politics. Join me, John, and my co-host Alicia for weekly coverage of Season 3 by searching your podcast app for The Lorehounds. Dove andi se tova segain? It's time to roll the dice.